If you have a Bible this morning, you can open to Matthew chapter 5, and that is where we're going to be. See, we have a Red Lane Baptist pin up here on the pulpit, obviously left by David Dorner last week. That's his home church. It was great to have David and his wife Susan here. They didn't share with us, but be praying for them as they are praying about their return to South Asia. They've got some difficult circumstances facing them with some bureaucratic things involving the government of the country that they're working in. And so they could definitely use your prayers over the next month or so. It's a pretty crucial time in terms of them being able to continue that great ministry we heard about last week and the disciple-making that they are doing there. So keep them in prayer. But this morning we return to the Beatitudes. Matthew chapter 5 will be in the third Beatitude, verse 5. And before I go there, I'm going to try to imagine a scene together. And it's one that we don't have to try hard to imagine because we can read it from the Scriptures, okay? So we return to a scene from the Scriptures. 2,000 years ago, two men standing in a Roman governor's palace. One of them is Pontius Pilate, and the other one is Jesus of Nazareth. And the question is, which of these guys is more powerful? Okay? Now, I know we're in church and you know better, so you're going to say, well, Jesus, okay? Jesus was the more powerful one. Even if today is the first day you've been in church in 25 years, you would probably also give the Sunday school answer when you hear the preacher ask a question like that. But imagine if you were just looking on without a whole lot of context as the scene unfolded. Jesus in that moment is seemingly the poster child for weakness. He is a poor Jew caught on the wrong side of the Roman authority. He is frail. He's got no earthly justice on his side, no advocate in that way. He is a man who is hours away from the most humiliating death possible, and he is a man who is about to be eliminated from the face of the earth. Pilate, on the other hand, is the epitome of power. The authority of Rome is on his side. He was in total control. The guy across the room from him is in chains, but he's free to choose the circumstances to play out however he sees them fit to play out. And as a Roman governor, the earth as the ancient world knew it belonged to him. So how can the Sunday school answer be true then? How can it be that Jesus is the more powerful one in that governor's palace? Right? I mean, the spoiler alert is, yes, it's him. He is the one that's more powerful, but how? How can it be that Jesus is the one who is actually free in that moment? How can it be that Jesus is the one who will actually inherit the earth? How can it be that Pilate is really the one in chains, and that Pilate is really the one standing there with no inheritance? The third Beatitude exegetes that scene for us. The third Beatitude breaks that scene down and leaves us with the nuts and bolts and gives us the answers that we are looking for. And so I'm going to read it, and just for the sake of context, I'm going to read the first two Beatitudes as well along with it. So I'll start in verse 3. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. 2 weeks ago, we saw a paradox in blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. This week, we have another paradox, and we'll have another one next week, okay? We established that a paradox is a truth that is standing on its head, demanding our attention. And we shouldn't be surprised that Jesus' sermon intro to his most famous sermon is packed with paradoxes because his entire teaching ministry was marked by them. Think about some of the things that Jesus said. The first shall be last. Right? Give and it will be given to you. Anyone who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. Whoever loses their life will find it. The least is the greatest. Poor is rich. Serving is ruling. In the same way that Jesus would use parables to reveal truth to people, he used paradoxes to call attention to the words of truth that he was saying. And in the case of the third Beatitude, this paradox doesn't just demand our attention. It's like this massive vessel pushing back against the entire current of the Pacific Ocean. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. That is nonsense to the world, and not just to Western culture today in 2017. It's nonsense to the way the world has always worked. I mean, what do we see in the world? What we see in history and what we see in the world today is, blessed are the proud, for they shall inherit the earth. That's the attitude of the world. Blessed are those who can intimidate, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who oppress with power, for they shall inherit the earth. And that's not just what we see in the world. If we're honest with ourselves, a lot of us are attracted to that. We're attracted to that. We're attracted to someone who will intimidate. We're attracted to someone who will use their power for the sake of gaining control. And so we have a mindset that has been warped by the culture to kind of buy into this. It is no wonder that Darwinism found the world standing there with open arms, ready to hug it and squeeze it until the nonsense inside of it oozed out. Because from the time Adam and Eve fell and were ousted from the garden, and Cain took his brother's life because he wanted to and he could, the world has ran on the philosophy of survival of the fittest. The strong will survive, the weak will die. But then here comes Jesus. And when he talks about whom all things will ultimately belong to, he says it's not survival of the fittest, it's survival of the meekest. If you went down to Patrick Henry Mall this morning, or this afternoon, whatever, and you made it through the cloud of cigarette smoke outside the food court, I always crack up the no smoking sign right outside the food court, because there may be more people smoking there on a regular basis than anywhere else in all of Newport News. You go through that little section, you go in the food court, and just stand there at that intersection, maybe down by the Chick-fil-A. Just stand there and just stop people and say, hey, let me ask you, what do you want to be known for? What do you want to be known for? I wonder how many hundreds of people you would have to ask before somebody said, I want to be known for meekness. And yet Jesus says, blessed are the meek. And so what is meekness after all? Well, as we've done the first couple of Beatitudes, let's first start with what meekness is not before we talk about what it is. First of all, meekness is not weakness. Meekness is not weakness. Cowards are not meek. Spineless men and women are not meek. The timid are not meek. All of these things denote a weakness of character that is fatal in terms of strength, and so meekness is none of these things. If you're living a life where you trust God in very little and you fear almost everything, you are not living a blessed life of meekness. In fact, you're doing the opposite. You are living a life that God does not intend for you. He does not intend a timid spirit for us, but a spirit of power and of love and of self-discipline. Power, love, self-discipline, none of those things are weak. Therefore, meekness cannot be weakness. Meekness runs without hindrance with the current of God's will. Weakness fights against the will of God. So meekness and weakness, they're not compatible. All right? So we should not make them synonyms of one another. Meekness is also not peace at all costs. You know, somebody who will just say, well, yeah, I agree with you, just to kind of get out of confrontation, and then the next person comes by, they say something totally the opposite of the person before them, and say, oh, yeah, I agree with you, just because they don't want confrontation. If you have a person that will do anything to get peace, what you're going to have is someone who is willing to weakly compromise their values. And we're going to talk more about peace next month when we get to that beatitude, but a peace that we arrive at by letting go of the very things that define us is not really peace. That is just people-pleasing. And while people-pleasing might put band-aids on difficult situations, it'll never actually heal wounds. So that's not meekness. Meekness is not simply having a withdrawn personality. Okay? We're going to define meekness here in a moment, and There are extroverts that are meek, and there are introverts that are meek. Simply being introverted is not like a spiritual value, okay? It's not a noble thing in and of itself. There are meek extroverts, meek introverts, everything in between. And meekness is also not mere niceness, okay? I remember when I was 14 years old, My aunt worked at the Richmond Coliseum to raise funds for her son who played baseball. And so me and my cousin Chris would go with her to the events when wrestling was there at the Richmond Coliseum, because she got to park the same place the wrestlers got to park. And so after she got done making the French fries or whatever, we go down and we got to meet all these different wrestlers. And so I met like Kurt Angle, and I met The Rock. I got to meet one day Diamond Dallas Page and Brutus the Barber Beefcake. The Rock was actually very mean to me when he met me, not because he's a jerk, but because he stayed in character, and I respect that. Okay, he was like, "I don't have time for you, you little jabroni," you know. So that was fine, but I remember Diamond Dallas Page and Brutus the Barber Beefcake were like the nicest guys I had ever met. Like, Brutus got down on his knee and like talked to us, and I just couldn't believe how nice they were. Neither one of those guys, though, to this day claims to be a Christian. Okay, one has a very successful yoga company, but that's about it. All right, they don't claim to be Christians, and despite all their niceness, what they did that day, it was of no spiritual value. Okay, just being nice didn't like glorify Jesus or anything. Okay, that wasn't meekness that day. They're just being nice guys. Okay, there's nice people all over the place, but there are few meek people. So when we talk about meekness, we are talking about something that is so much more than this. We're talking about a foundational Christian aspect of character that transcends all of these things. And to get to the bottom of what meekness is, you can actually look at how this Greek word is used outside of the Bible. Okay? The word used here is praus. That's the Greek word used for meek. And it was used in classical Greek literature to describe things like tame animals. It was used to describe healing and soothing medicine. It was used to describe gentle things like breezes. Kent Hughes says meekness is a caressing word. And this word praus that we get meekness from, it's a caressing word. And yet here's the thing about all those things I just mentioned. They're not necessarily weak, are they? Like a lion can be tame and yet is still perfectly capable of detaching your head from your neck. Right? Medicine can soothe, but in order to do so, it has to be more powerful than the discomfort in the body. The wind can be gentle, but it can also destroy. And so, while it's a caressing word, there is a strength implied. Meekness also implied self-control in Greek culture. This comes from the teachings of Aristotle, who lived almost four centuries before Jesus. Here's what he said. Anybody can become angry, that is easy. But to be angry with the right person and to the right degree and at the right time and for the right purpose and in the right way, that is not within everybody's power and is not easy. And so if we gather all this up, meekness becomes this unique combination of power and gentleness. A good working definition that has grown pretty popular in evangelicalism, you may have read it in a book or heard another preacher say it, is that meekness is strength under control. That's what meekness is. It is strength under control. And when Jesus says, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth," he is actually referring to the Old Testament. He is alluding to Psalm 37. Here is Psalm 37, verse 11. "But the meek shall inherit the land and delight themselves in abundant peace." Now, the context of this verse, I think, sheds some light on Jesus' intentions for the third beatitude. Psalm 37 is written for the Israelites who are living in the Promised Land. And yet, those who are truly following Yahweh, they are not possessing the Promised Land because of the evil people who are in the land working against those who trust the Lord. And so what the psalm promises is that ultimately God is going to separate people into two groups, those who follow him and those who are rebellious, those who surrender to him and those who fight against him. And his judgment regarding these two groups will be righteous. But in the meantime, as the people of God await the judgment of God in Psalm 37, what are they supposed to do? Well, in Psalm 37, verse 3, they are to trust in the Lord and do good as they wait on the judgment of God. In verse 5, they are commit their way to the Lord and to trust in him and the fact that he is going to act. In verse 7, they are to be still before the Lord and to wait patiently for Him. So what is the bedrock for the sort of meekness that the people are being called to in Psalm 37, verse 11? When God says, hey, it's the meek that are going to inherit the land. Okay? Well, who are the meek, Lord? What are they doing right now? Tell me the characteristics of the meek. Well, they trust in me and they do good while they wait on my judgment. They commit their way to me as they wait on my judgment. They trust in me as they wait on my judgment. They are still before me. They wait patiently upon me. Trust, commitment, stillness, waiting, patience. It's a totally firm belief in the reliability of God's sovereign justice and wisdom. That's the theology behind meekness. I got to do a funeral last night where the woman that I did it for, Marion Guy, member of our church, her family had gotten a hold of her prayer journal. And so I actually got to read from her prayer journal at her funeral, which is a pretty rare thing to do and was very cool. And so I told her family and the friends gathered, so we got to know what type of theologian she is because we got to read her prayer journal. And she was a pretty good one according to the journal. Okay? Theology behind meekness is total reliability on the sovereign justice of God and the sovereign wisdom of God. And here's the thing, there has never been a greater theologian than Jesus. Okay, John Calvin, Wayne Grudem, whoever you like, Martin Luther, never been a greater theologian than Jesus. And so you can imagine, if there's never been a greater theologian than Jesus, there has never been anyone to display meekness quite like him. Let's think about the meekness of Christ for a moment, the under control strength of Christ. He did not practice vindication or revenge. He was mocked, he was spit on, and yet, like a sheep before the shearers, he kept his mouth closed and he trusted his Father. Just like the people were supposed to trust God in Psalm 37 as they awaited his judgment. He's confronted by Pilate, where we started this morning. He only spoke a few necessary words to convey the reality of the situation to Pilate, who was a very confused man. When his closest friends left him high and dry at his most pivotal moment, he sought no revenge upon them in his post-resurrection reunion. And really didn't even pull an I told you so, that certainly we all would have done, right? He did not. When Peter denied him as an associate, much less as his Lord, he restored Peter with love to ministry and to fellowship with him. Even when Judas betrays him with a kiss, what does he call him? He calls him friend. And of course, as he's dying upon the cross, he says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Some of us want somebody's head on a platter if they post a Facebook status we think might be about us. Or if they post a political meme that gets under our skin. And yet Jesus, gentle and mild, was in total control in all of these situations. Did not lash out. He's the picture of that total reliability upon the sovereignty of God that we just talked about from Psalm 37. And yet, as you read through all of these events in the Gospels, do you ever get the sense that he's not in control? That he's not powerful? No, the whole time he is just radiating power. He's exhibiting nothing but power. And so what that tells us is that though meekness is strength under control, it's not a call to be a doormat. Because when you read about Jesus, when it came to getting the gospel right, and it came to the disadvantage of being picked on, he was the Lion of Judah. He was ferocious. He rebuked the Pharisees. He called them names publicly to shed light on their fakeness and their shallow, self-righteous, works-based teaching that was leading the people away from God. I think we get kind of used to the name-calling from Jesus because we've maybe read it a few times. But imagine, like, if somebody came in here this morning and challenged my teaching as a pastor, and I said, man, you are a ditch full of snakes. You would be like, whoa. I mean, that was steamy, you know? Like, that was intense, Right? You call your friends, you got home, you never guess what the pastor said to this guy this morning in the middle of the service. But Jesus did this in front of a bunch of people on a regular basis. He would call names like this. You guys are like a tomb, clean on the outside with a bunch of rotting bones on the inside. He would roast them in front of everyone. He got hot with his disciples when they tried to keep little children away from him. He made a whip and drove the money changers out of the temple. By the way, I've always loved that he made the whip. He didn't say, hey, Bartholomew, go find a whip for me. I'm going to get these guys out of here. But no, he sat down, made a whip, thinking about what he was going to do, and then went in there and did it. How hardcore is that? When Peter objected to the idea of Jesus dying for the sake of the people of God, he said, get behind me, Satan. You think Thomas isn't in the back going, whoo? That was a zinger. I mean, right? I mean, you would have been taken aback by it. But when the gospel was on the line, when righteousness was on the line, when somebody, again, was being taken advantage of, when somebody powerful was trying to intimidate with that power, Jesus was there for them. He was ready to stand up for what was right. And going back to that Aristotle quote, he did it to the right degree, at the right time, at the right target, always. So you lay all this out on the table, the puzzle pieces start to come together, and you see Jesus, this gentle man who trusts God. This man who has mildness about his presence and yet also has this indescribable strength which he shows by standing up for those on the fringes and standing firm when it came to the will of God and the glory of God. And yet all the while he showed love rather than retaliation against those who were evil and those who were doing evil. Now we know from the words of the Father himself that Jesus is his Son and that in him he is well pleased. That being the case, it's no surprise that meekness in spirit brings the approval and the applause of God. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who are meek like Jesus. And so what about us? Are we meek? Well, in the Christ-like sense, no, we are not. Jesus is the only one who has perfectly manifested meekness in every area of life during every moment of his life. His life was perpetual strength under control. Yours is not. There have been moments where your strength has clicked the override button on your control. And what does that look like? It looks like a fit of rage, right? There have also been moments where at least what you in your mind deem to be control, click the override button on your strength, and there's moments where you should have stood up for something and you didn't. Because you thought, well, peace at all costs, right? I don't want to cause a stir. I don't want to cause a ruckus here. But if God is shaping and molding us, and he is, Romans 8:29, for those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son. And so, as much as he has saved us, he is also conforming us to look more like Jesus. If that is the case, if he's shaping and molding us, then we should start to look like him. And if we are starting to look like him, then meekness will be part of the package. And so, let's do a little litmus test when it comes to meekness. Let's talk about some of the attitudes that are the opposite of meekness, that have a habit of showing up in you and in me. I think one would be severity. If you find yourself being severe and harsh in the way that you deal with people and treat people, and there's a general roughness and an absence of gentleness, that is not meekness. And I know, and I may step on toes, but you pay me for that. I know that in our culture today, we have started to look at an absence of gentleness and a general roughness and gone, oh, that's just not being politically correct. That's cool. Look, I don't like politically correct culture either. I think that for the most part, it's pretty dumb. But there are times, it's not political correctness. It's just not being a jerk. And so we can't go, I can say whatever I want because I'm not politically correct. If your life is marked by severity, that's not meekness. You're going against the will of God in that. Another characteristic would be to be a grabbing person, to have a grabbing lifestyle. That is not meekness. And what I mean by that is if the driving force of your life is to make sure you always get yours first, and you really don't care about who is hurt in the process, then you have a grabbing lifestyle. You're constantly grabbing and clawing to be number one. It's not what Jesus did, right? The first shall be last. The last shall be first. This is not who he was. And I know that we live in a world that is very much about you go and get yours. And you worry about everybody else afterward. But that is not what the kingdom looks like. Another red flag in our lives when it comes to meekness would be vengefulness. If you're a vengeful person, if you operate more like Michael Corleone than Jesus, that's not displaying meekness. Are you an easy forgive? Or does somebody have to grovel? And while they're groveling, you need to give them a few kicks in the ribs before you're ready to forgive them. Or do you have a forgiving reputation? We live in an eye for an eye world, right? Just get them back. Get them back. Make them pay. Make them hurt. Make them suffer. This is not the way Jesus operated. This is not the way the kingdom operates. And then lastly, are you out of control? If your life is commonly marked by rage and anger and you just tend to explode on circumstances or people you don't like, that's not meekness. Even worse, you don't just explode on people you don't like, you explode on the people that you are supposed to love the most, your spouse and your kids. It's not meekness. Now, if I'm kind of reading through these red flags, right, severity, having this kind of grabby lifestyle, vengefulness, being out of control, and you're going, yeah, this kind of sounds like me sometimes. I'm not suggesting you're not a Christian this morning. It's one thing to fall into these sins from time to time. It's one thing to have seasons where we may struggle a bit. But if they're a part of like who you are on a weekly and even daily basis, this is your persona. You're not really repentant about it. You may even beat your chest because in your mind you're thinking, blessed are those who intimidate, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who are the strongest, for they shall inherit the earth. In your mind, you're still operating in a very Darwinistic way. Hey, survival of the fittest, man. It doesn't matter if I'm severe. It doesn't matter if I grab. It doesn't matter if I'm vengeful. It doesn't matter if I'm out of control, right? Because as long as I'm the fittest, as long as I'm the strongest, I'm going to get mine. Well, not according to Jesus. You're going to get nothing. Because the meek are the ones that inherit the earth. And you have to ask yourself a real question here. Do you have the applause of God? Not according to Jesus. The reward for meekness indicates just how important it is that we are counted among the meek. Remember what Jesus is alluding to here. Psalm 37, right? A text about the inheritance of the promised land. As the New Testament church, we don't seek a promised land on this earth. Okay? We don't seek a city in this kingdom, at least not as it is now. Instead, we seek heaven. And we seek the reward of Christ in heaven. And ultimately, yes, we will seek the new earth after it's been burnt up by the judgment of God. We seek eternity with Christ. Romans 8:17 tells us about a time that is coming where the people of God, the meek, will reign with Christ on the new earth, confirming the truth of this great promise given by Jesus here that the meek shall inherit the earth. And that future promise has a present impact upon our faith. And I think one of the biggest impacts is we're just freed up from the disease of more that the world lives with. You think about people that are filthy rich, I mean, richer than, you know, the other 99% of the world, right? What do they want? Most of them probably want more money if you talk to them, even though they've got more than they could ever spend. They want to get rich. You think about people who have all the best technology, but there's always one more toy. I mean, I'm guilty of that myself. Struggle with that one. People who have clothes they're never going to wear always want one more shopping spree. Right? The disease of more is everywhere in this world. It's easy for us to fall into it, but we have to recognize that we're actually free from that disease. Because we don't have to have more. Why does the world grab for more now? Because, like I said, it's survival of the fittest. Got to get it now. One day they're going to grow weak and they will die and they will leave all the rewards behind on this planet to burn up in the dump or to burn up in God's judgment. But believers can live life and enjoy it. We can enjoy it with strength and we can enjoy it under control because we know that no matter how much victory or suffering we experience in the here and now, our inheritance is yet to come. And so we can trust in the sovereign God and His promises and live with a controlled strength in this world, just like the Israelites could in the promised land filled with those who were rebelling against God. I know that sometimes we think God's people will be rich in eternity, and we will, but we're rich now. We are rich now. Let me close with just a few warnings for us about meekness, and then we're going to be done. Number one, if you're here this morning and you're hearing this and you're going, man, meekness sounds awesome. Even if you're not religious, you're just like, hey, this sounds good. Strength under control sounds good. I want to warn you that meekness only comes through the transformation of the Holy Spirit. You will not get meekness through behavior modification and self-control. You might be able to be meek for a day or a week, but soon enough you'll be vengeful and you'll be grabbing again and you'll be severe and you'll be out of control. You have to turn from your sin and ask for the forgiveness of God and ask for His Spirit to come into your life and change you from the inside out. And if you are a believer here already this morning, recognize the Spirit of God dwells in you. Don't try to operate outside of Him to get the spiritual quality of meekness, but recognize that He dwells in you and it's only going to come from Him and His work. Real meekness only comes by the grace of God, and the applause that comes with it only comes by the grace of God. Number two, if you want to be meek, yoke yourself to Jesus. Matthew 11:29 says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Now, most of you probably don't deal with a yoke on a regular basis. I'm not talking about an egg yolk, okay? Y-O-K-E. Most of us probably don't deal with a yoke on a regular basis, but in Jesus' agricultural society, this teaching had a bit more context. The yoke was this kind of W-shaped, big wooden object. And it had two spaces for oxen to get in. And they would take a younger ox that doesn't really know how to plow with endurance yet. And they would put it in the yoke with an older ox that was strong and was used to plowing and understood what a day's work looked like in the fields. And the older ox in the yoke would train the younger ox on how to perform and how to plow with endurance. When we get in the yoke with the meek Master Jesus, we will learn how to plow with meekness from Him. And so walk with Him. Yoke yourself to Him. And lastly, allow the first two Beatitudes to drive you to meekness. Right, we talked about how the Beatitudes build on one another, and it's the same thing here. We started with two Beatitudes that, if we're honest, they're, you know, a little bit negative, like they kind of hurt us a little bit, right? You got to recognize your spiritual poverty and then mourn over it, okay? But today, I would imagine you've probably felt a little bit more positive as we sat here talking about the third Beatitude. Blessed are the meek. But here's the thing, the meekness grows from the soil of the first two Beatitudes. We realize that nothing commends us to God. We mourn over our spiritual poverty. We lament over our spiritual poverty. And then we receive the blessing and comfort of God in that place. And from that blessed state, we trust God in a life of controlled strength, surrendered to Him. I'll leave you with this quote this morning. William Booth, Salvation Army founder, said, "The greatness of a man's power is measured by the strength of his surrender." How surrendered are you to Jesus? How surrendered are you to the will of the Lord? I can pretty much guarantee that in the answer to that question of how surrendered are you, you will find out how truly meek you are. I can pretty much guarantee we don't have any meek people here this morning that aren't walking with Christ. In fact, I know there aren't. The only way you get meekness is from walking with Jesus. The only way that you get strength under control is from walking with Jesus. You will not be strong under control in your parenting, in your friendships, in your relationships, in your marriage, in your workplace, coaching your little league team, whatever. You will not have strength under control. You will not have meekness in any of these areas unless you were walking with the Lord and surrendered to Him. The greatness of your power, the greatness of your strength under control is going to be measured by the strength of your surrender to the Lord. So how surrendered are you? Are you holding things back from Him? Are you keeping things off the table when it comes to His lordship? Jesus put His whole life on the table before His Father and said, "It's yours. I'm obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross." And all of the meek men and women in the last 2,000 years who have come after Jesus have done the same thing. They've put their whole lives out on the table and said, "It's all yours, Lord. Even to the point of death, it's all yours. I'm not going to hold anything back from you." The more that we put out there, the more we give up control of our lives to God, the more under control by the power of His Spirit we will be. The more we say to Him, "I am weak. I am weak. And so I'm going to give my life up to you because in my weakness, I'm just going to drive it into a tree. If not in this life, then certainly for eternity. I'm weak, Lord." The more we confess our weakness to Him, the stronger we will be. Because in our weakness, His strength will be made perfect. Strength under control comes through surrender. How surrendered are you? Let's pray together. Father, make us the meek people that we've talked about this morning. Make us those who will inherit the earth, that will only come by Your supernatural power and change. So many ideas flying around in this world about what a person should be, God. And I don't hear anybody saying meekness on my TV. I don't see anybody saying meekness on the Bill O'Reilly show or the Anderson Cooper show. I don't see anybody saying that in the sitcoms. I don't see anybody saying that in the latest HBO drama. It's just You alone, Lord. You're the only one talking about meekness. The ancient scriptures are as true as ever this morning and as relevant as ever this morning. And God, we need them. We're not going to be like this culture. There's so many, God, who are trying to rule with power and strength in their lives, and not the good type of strength. Trying to intimidate, trying to push their way to the front of the line. And they get nothing. The meek get everything. Most importantly, You. So, God, make us these sorts of people by Your Holy Spirit. Change us from the inside out. And God, I know we say this often, but it's so true that if we become the type of people that Your word calls us to be, we're going to look so just outstandingly different in this world that people are going to take notice, and it's going to be a great witness to You. It will bring glory to our Father who is in heaven. And so, God, I pray we would surrender to You, and then You would be glorified in our meekness. And ultimately, God, we look forward to the day where the meek are gathered at Your feet and the nations are gathered at Your feet. So we cast our eye, Lord, beyond this world to the reward that is to come, the inheritance that is to come. And we ask You to change us, to change us, to change us, God. This is our prayer this morning. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. We believe it. We want to be changed. Pray this in Christ's name. Amen. Let's stand together and sing. And if you want to come down and pray with Pastor Jordan and I about anything you'd like to